Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined by Craig Burley here in the studio. We'll kick things off in the Premier League on Sunday. It was, of course, the Manchester derby, City playing host to United. And it'll be Kevin De Bruyne who would open the scoring early in this game. Cristiano Ronaldo not featuring. Jadon Sancho with a great individual effort to get the equaliser. That was really the only positive for United, because then Kevin De Bruyne made it 2-1. Two goals in the second half for Riyad Mahrez would see City take all 3 points to extend their lead once again to 6 over Liverpool in the Premier League. For more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Frank Leboeuf and Nader Manua. Boys, we'll go to you in a moment. But first, Craig, once again, we saw the golfing quality between these two sides.
We knew that anyway. So you have to make up for it in different ways. And one of the ways you have to make up for it is hard work, desire, effort. Now, for a little period, the way I would sum this game up would be United turned up for a little bit and then they didn't. United were competitive for a little bit and then they weren't. It was almost like a 4-2-4 to start with Pogba and Bruno Fernandes and then the two wide lads. And it kind of confused Man City a little bit. They didn't, obviously they got the great start with the goal. And then their passing wasn't, Pogba and Fernandes kind of played a little bit further up. And then City never quite got their passing going. And then United did look dangerous. They got the goal and then there was a couple of counter-attacks as well. And you thought, oh, this is, you know, maybe City were, you know, just feeling the pressure of Liverpool. Yep. Maybe we're going to see another United performance against them where they hit them on the counter and they don't quite look right. And yeah, it was a little competitive for a while. And then the second half was just, I mean, you talk about throwing the towel in. I mean, short of Ralph Rangnick walking around with a white towel going like that, giving up. I don't know what. I mean, I'll give you another story. And I'm only putting this out there. Ronaldo was injured. Edison Cavani had trained for the 3 days before. Rangnick said he'd trained well, but then he said he wasn't available. Now, whether he would have played or not and changed the system, but he didn't even make himself available. I kind of think that's indicative of a lot of this United squad.
Right.
They will not go that extra, never mind mile, they won't go that extra inch. What, is there a big game for Uruguay coming up or something? What, is it a testimonial summary? Don't want to put himself on the bench? That sort of exemplifies the problems that Rangnick's got on top of the bad defending, on top of the lack of desire in the second half. And then City, you give City an inch, you give them a little sniff that you might have your chin on the floor and they will batter you. And I thought that's what, after a difficult half an hour or so, I thought City were brilliant in the second half. But boy, it's not just about quality. It's about desire, and we saw none of it from Man United the second half.
It's interesting, Frank. I was thinking back to the Everton game, which, of course, Everton have had a horrible season, obviously losing their manager, coming in, they're in a relegation fight. But at least there was some fight that we saw at Goodison last weekend. There was none of that in the second half from Manchester United. If I'm a United fan, that's the thing that would disappoint me the most from this showing.
Me too, because I think what they did for half an hour in the first half is they worked hard. They had the desire, they worked together, and they were mentally ready to suffer, but also create. But as soon as De Bruyne scored the second goal, everything vanished. And they didn't work anymore together. I saw some head down, and it didn't work anymore. City put the second gear, and it was over. And that's only because mentally you don't want to work, you don't want to force yourself to go to the extreme to work for the club. That's we see, that's what we see for the beginning, since the beginning of the season, and that's what's clearly the difference between Manchester United and Manchester City today. City, with the pressure, with Liverpool winning yesterday, they were, you know, a little bit concerned. And this why maybe for 30 minutes they didn't play how they play normally, but then after they felt secure, they put the second gear, they went. and completely the opposite for Manchester United. That's not the Manchester United we want to see. And I'm not a clear fan of Manchester, but I feel very sad for the fans.
Yeah, Nader, it was the striking thing. What was it? Over 90% possession City had with the ball in the last 15 minutes of this tie, where you just feel that United were just looking up the scoreboard, waiting for it to end.
Yeah, I think that is right. I think we've seen times gone by where, say, a team will feel like they have a ton of possession, but very rarely have I seen a statistic come up where in 15 minutes you've had 92% of the ball. And I think just as a professional player, whether it's in a game, whether it's in training or anything like that, like, that shouldn't happen. That shouldn't be allowed to happen. And then when you bring in the context of the fact that it's a derby game, I think lots of United fans are furious because the derby itself isn't necessarily based along just playing nice football. It's based upon essentially fighting for your club in this game. And then if nice football comes, then that's a bonus, not an expectation. So for them to play the way that they did in the second half, obviously there's the other side of the coin where you give credit to City. But for United, like, you've got to ask so many questions, but they look like a side, for me, who don't have the belief in the system and in the people around them. It's fractured and, like, we've seen teams not as good on paper as Manchester United go to the Etihad and put on a better performance in 4 to 5 minutes than they did today. So you have to ask serious questions as to why that was the case. Because, again, you know, we could talk about tactics and this, that and the other, but you still have 11 versus 11 in a derby game, which means everything to the fans of both clubs. And for me, it was weird to see. It was weird to see. I think this one, for me, feels bigger than, say, the 6-1 all those years ago. Because when you look back at that game, United still had a few chances. They're down to 10 men. There was a greater sense of adversity. But in this one, the adversity wasn't there. And it was just a case of they literally did not turn up in that second half. And that is as alarming as it comes, in my opinion.
I saw Fulham of the Championship until it got a bit messy at the end. Put up a better performance, you know, in terms of giving City some problems. I saw Peterborough in the FA Cup give them some bigger problems. This United side, in my era of playing and covering the game, I've never seen a United side in that time throw the towel in as easy as this bunch. Think back to some recent games. Burnley, Southampton and Middlesbrough of the Championship, they were winning all those games, I believe, and those teams come out in the second half, gave them a bloody nose, and in some cases they folded. They completely folded. Whenever somebody, and now I know they weren't winning this game, but they got themselves back in this game. They were actually looking okay, as Frank said, for half an hour. You know, it was kind of something different that Ranić did, and it was confusing City a little bit. And we saw Guardiola on the sidelines. He was getting animated. Mm-hmm. He realised that, you know, he's thinking, oh, not another one of these where they hit us on the counter. They're looking dangerous. Sancho in behind, you know, Pogba dropping a little bit deeper and all this sort of stuff. But that just, I don't know what happened at half-time, but that just completely went out the window.
What happened at half-time? That's the thing, isn't it? Because only one team turned up after the break. I mean, how do you explain that?
I can't explain it other than there's just, and I think one of the lads used it, there's just no belief, there's no real belief in this United team that they can compete. You know, we've got, as I say, we've got Cavani who, I don't know, by the rhetoric of the manager, didn't want to make himself available. We've got Harry Maguire, who has had a tough time making inexplicable choices in a six-yard box, letting the ball run through his legs. Now, this is not the whole reason they lost, but I just don't understand why a defender would do that when you just launch it for a corner and go, right, OK, we got away with that one, let's regroup from the corner and do the basics. He's just let it run through his legs on the six-yard box. He's no idea what's around about him. Mm. The decision-making is incredible. I have no problem with City pummeling Manchester United. They're a better side. They've got much better players. They've got a much better coach. I've got a problem with teams giving up.
Right.
Big teams. Some of the biggest in the world. One of the biggest clubs in the world. Their players gave up. I've got a problem with that.
We'll talk about United more in a moment, in particular Cristiano Ronaldo, but I feel we need to talk about Manchester City as well, because it took two to tango in this game, Nadim, and I thought this was one of the best performances we'd seen from Jack Grealish.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think going into this game now, I was hoping that he was going to have a good performance because it would be one which would have to be spoken about. And you could see he sort of got in his groove. I think some people questioned whether he should be starting or not. You know, you've got people like Sterling on the bench and so on. But I thought he did well. I thought he linked up really well. And it feels like he's starting to fully understand what's required of him in this side. And it's a bit different to the way that probably he perceived at the start of the season. So, you know, you give him credit for falling into that and you can see his value. Like, he was very good, like a lot of other players were in that team today. And to be honest, when they play like that, they're obviously very, very tough to play against. But again, I doubt they probably anticipated that the second half would go the way that it did. But then it shows, as we're alluding to before, there's belief amongst all the players in that City side. They know exactly how to play. And if something's going wrong, they'll make a quick adjustment and sort of go back to a similar sort of style to try and expose the weakness of the opposition. And they did that. And you could see, you know, people spreading the field well. So United, when they started off pressing well, next thing they're doing a half press. But then the thing about doing a half press, it means that once they break past you, people run at your back line. So United were neither here nor there, but for City and for Jack Grealish today, I thought they were superb.
See, Nedim said there, he's starting to understand. And my old boss at Celtic, Wim Janssen, who passed away recently, used to have a saying to some of the players, not me, fortunately, but he used to say, you don't understand, you're in the stand.
Right.
Basically. And yeah. I think, you know, there's going to be a realisation for Jack Grealish that, and we've talked about this on the show, is that, you know, with all respect, he's not at Villa now. He was undroppable at Villa. Everybody's droppable pretty much at Man City. You don't take in what the managers tell you. You don't understand what's needed of you. You don't play. And so he has to grasp that on a consistent basis. I was a little surprised when Raheem Sterling wasn't playing. I thought it was a big call. But at the end of the day, it was a call that worked out by the scoreline. So the manager is correct when the result is correct.
Who's winning the league, Frank? City or Liverpool?
I would love to answer to you, but I think the pressure is on Manchester City, and we saw that, and I think it's not only due to Manchester United performance for the first 30 minutes. I think Man City started, I would say, not very good, especially defensively, where there were some hesitation. I saw Rodrigo not at his best on the Sancho goal. And because of the pressure that they have from Liverpool. So everything is possible. But yesterday, we were talking about that. We didn't see the best of Liverpool. There were some open spaces behind them. They could have drawn against West Ham. So everything is open. And it will be crazy for me to say, well, it's going to be easy for City or not. It's going to be a big fight, big battle. Obviously, fantastic games like we saw today. And we'll see. The best going to win.
Let's welcome him. I think Gab Marcotti is standing by because, of course, the big story leading up to this game was Cristiano Ronaldo not in the squad. And now there's all sorts of different rumours flying around, Gab. One that he was told he wasn't starting, so then refused to be with the team. Others suggest that he's in Portugal getting a hip injury treated. His sister's come out, apparently, and said that he was fit to play. Can you set us straight on any of these?
Well, not having, not being a doctor, not having visited Cristiano Ronaldo myself, I can't. But it is one of those situations. I was trying to think back of games where Cristiano Ronaldo had pulled himself out of games because he wasn't starting or because he wasn't happy. There really aren't that many. In fact, I couldn't think of any in recent years. He's been around so long, I'm sure it must have happened at some point. But is there some scenario where maybe he wants to get the flexor looked at? And, you know, maybe if he wasn't starting, maybe he felt, look, it's better to treat myself. I also have a big playoff coming up later this month, of course, to go to the World Cup. I mean, it's plausible, but I think the reality right now is that we just don't know. I would assume, though, that the reality will come to light one way or the other.
I would have guessed. I would have gone down the injury route. I don't. And why? You know, why don't the player just clear this up himself? Right? Did you say his sister?
Yeah, I don't think he's. I think he's only got 400 million followers on Instagram, so no, it'll be tricky.
I don't. And anyway, our graphic says Cristiano Ronaldo's future with Man United. I really don't think it's important.
This is the weird thing, isn't it? Because you think Cristiano Ronaldo would be the big story. It really isn't, because there are so many other problems that United have.
I don't think, you know, and I'm a huge admirer, of course, of what that guy has done. It's been amazing, but I just don't think it's a big story. I think United have, you know, he's certainly not the future at his age. They have so many problems. And yeah, you know, he plays or he doesn't play, I don't think it makes a difference in this game at all.
Yeah.
Whether Cristiano Ronaldo plays or not, I think they were just completely outplayed. But it's just not a story for me anymore, to be honest with you.
Did someone make a noise when Craig said it wouldn't make a difference if he played?
Well, yeah, that was me. Maybe I'm a bit of a romantic, but part of the idea of having, you know, you guys talked about before about what happened at halftime, what might have happened, why United were so limp in the second half. People who've played with Cristiano, people in dressing rooms say that part of the reason you have him there is that he can often make sure that stuff like that doesn't happen. You know, he's got the gravitas, he's got the leadership, he's got the experience. I'm not saying that definitely had he been there, we would have seen a better performance than that abject 45 minutes we saw in the second half. But maybe, just maybe, you know, they would have lost that game with a bit more pride.
It does feel, though, he was producing, well, certainly scoring more goals than Adam when Ralph wasn't there and it was Solskjaer in charge.
Yeah, according to that graphic, it looks that way, yeah. But I don't know. United are just they're in a very weird situation because you do have one of the best players of all time in your side. But then you also have a ton of other problems. Like, you look at the goals sort of ratio there, and it's not fantastic. And I'm sure for him, he's very frustrated by that. And there might be a couple of reasons for it. Because, to be honest, as Ranić was coming in, I was expecting a more sort of like free-flowing attacking style of football. You know, go out, press high, create chances and so on. But it doesn't seem to have worked. And now, as a consequence, you know, there was a camp that say, oh, Ronaldo's to blame. But then today, they're saying, well, how can he be to blame? Maybe the team's just this bad at this moment. And, you know, with what Gab's saying there, it is interesting. Ronaldo is, you know, he's probably a great leader, great professional, all this stuff. But some of these rumours and stuff that are coming out from Man United, you wonder, is his voice going as far as, say, it did in the past? Because it seems like that squad at the minute is really, really struggling. And whereas at the start of the season, you're hearing the stories like how they wouldn't even all have a dessert because Ronaldo's not having a dessert. To all of a sudden, it's like, well, apparently Ronaldo doesn't like Harry. Harry doesn't like Ronaldo, this, that, and the other. It's a mad situation for the club. And I think I'm with Craig on this one. I think ultimately, for the way that Man City played and the way that United attempt to play against them, I think Ronaldo maybe could have gotten you a goal. But I don't think it would have been enough if they played the way that they did elsewhere with some of the mistakes and, you know, style of play that existed within the side. So for me, it's a very interesting situation for United going forward.
Sounds like a really great place to be at the moment.
It must be miserable, yeah? You must have all been through these runs where it's just like you can't get anything going. It must be horrible.
Yeah, but in a general sense, most of the guys that I played with stuck together.
Right.
The only way you're going to get out of these things is by sticking together, is by grafting. There's no good going to come of any of this by trying to stitch your manager up, trying to stitch your teammates up, being the one that leaks or talks to the journalists about other players. It's okay talking to journalists, okay doing media duties and all that, but when you start dropping stuff in about other players and who likes who, and it doesn't end well. And so it just seems like a... And as I've said before many times on this show, since Ranić came over, he must have had no idea how poisonous it was behind the scenes. But I'll go back to say it, and I keep repeating myself. This is a consequence of allowing people in charge and behind the scenes on the football front and beyond to just run the show as if everything was actually going along okay, not too bad, we're actually doing okay, when really they were not. This is what happens, and now they've left themselves with an absolute mountain to climb in the summer. No matter where they finish this season, whether it be in the top four, whether it be fifth or sixth, they have left themselves with a mountain to climb when you see the difference between Liverpool and City and you see this current Man United squad.
Quickly, Nathan.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think when we look back to it now, a team that finished second last year that signed Sancho, Varane and Cristiano Ronaldo, that is now fighting to finish top four and are now an underdog within that, I think they need to internally have a really good look at what's going on there, because that formula should never lead to failure, in my opinion. Yet still here they are, so far off the pace compared to the others.
Thank you very much, guys. More from Nathan and Frank on the latest edition of Extra Time. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Big win then for Arsenal. Nathan, we've talked at length about how nobody wants to finish in the top four. We're just starting to see Arsenal make a statement, aren't we?
Some of the other teams have really been faltering. It seems like West Ham have run out of form. Spurs have been stinking a little bit. Same for Manchester United. Wolves have even run out of steam now. But Arsenal, they're not even playing that many games. I think their last game was 10 days ago. So there's been so much drama elsewhere. But they just keep ticking over, just getting these wins. And now to be in fourth and to have three games in hand over Manchester United, that's an incredible position to be in. And to be, as I say, to be in good form. My only concern is that one of those games is against Liverpool. And I think the other one's against Leicester as well. So there's no guarantee, you know, that those games in hand will count for something in the end. But they're doing what they need to do. And in fact, if they win their games in hand, I believe they're 2 points behind Chelsea. So who would have thought that would be part of the conversation at this point, given the way that they started? But credit to them, they found a level of consistency when other teams have faltered. And as we saw from those goals there, the sort of link-up plays Craig's alluding to and this, the sort of vision, the understanding between those players, that's exciting football. You know, not every team's doing that right now. You know, think about the way United would have dreamt of having that type of thing today in the game that they played. So if they can find a way to do it with this young side and, you know, solid back line as it stands at the minute, fourth seems like it's going to be theirs, and who knows, maybe even third.
The LeBouf Billions got to be on Arsenal finishing top four, aren't they, Frank?
I see them finishing in the first, top four, because I think they
will be a bit more excited about it.
Chasing. Okay, why? Why do you want me to be so excited?
I don't know, you seem a bit down about the whole conversation.
No, I was listening carefully, because I wanted to say that Arsenal deserved to win that game. But I have a little problem with Arteta going outside of his box to give the ball quickly. I don't know if he has the right to do so. If he has, well done, Mr. Arteta. Or on the other hand, maybe Lacazette deserved a penalty as well. But I would say that the last 20 minutes, Watford has been so clumsy that at the end of the game, I said, well, you know, it could have been surprising if they have put some chances in. So I think Arsenal are the best team of all four teams for chasing Chelsea. But there are still some question mark about the fact that they don't sometimes, they're not very serious defensively. So they have to be a little bit better. But otherwise, they are very convincing, and I'm very happy to see Arsenal being four.
He didn't give us an answer about where he's putting his Luxembourg money. he's hidden millions. Where he's putting?
It's not bad. What do you start? Three games. Three games. No goals. No wins. Arteta's rubbish. She's got to go. You were saying.
I didn't say that.
I'm sure you did.
In the archives somewhere. Think back to that mauling they took at the Etihad.
Yeah.
Okay. There was other games that they were, I think Brentford at the start of the season, it's just so long ago. People can go to the Etihad, and we saw it with Man United today, but they were utterly mauled at the start of the season. Defensively, they were a shambles. I don't think any of those defenders are actually there now. They might be at the club, some of them, but it's just a complete new back four. Three games in hand. I should throw in Tottenham have three games in hand. I won't go
you
there.
Would not put of Luxembourg money on that.
That was tongue in cheek. I've been saying for a few weeks now that Arsenal are looking the best side. West Ham have just although they played well yesterday actually, and were a real threat at Liverpool, I think they are running out of steam in terms of the squad size. We saw disarray from Man United today. Yeah. So if I was Arsenal, I'd actually feel good. But you can't be blasé about the three games in hand, because that'll go away quickly and then you're back in the bun fight. At the moment, they're in a really, really good position. And top of being in a good position, they're playing well. Although, I must say, second half, Watford missed a couple of easy chances, particularly one at the back post. when Dennis missed, which just was a tap in with his, with, he just completely got his body right in front of the ball. He got in there too quick, got ahead of it, and scooped it over. But you got to ride your luck sometimes. And you know, Arsenal have made some big calls this year. One of them being Aubameyang going away, and you know that's, they've solved that problem. He's gone to Barcelona. Dan. He's doing okay. But they're in a great position.
Very much so. Frank Leboeuf.
Money. Luxembourg.
Yes, thank you very much, Daniel. I just want to say something about the captain, Lacazette, because he doesn't score a lot of goals, but he's a risk keeper. I can feel that he's bringing all the, those young players to their best, and the two assists that he gave today are pure perfection, you know, to Saka, and the second one, I forgot, to Martinelli, I think. That was absolutely fantastic. The way he opens doors to the to Saka and Martinelli is absolutely delicious for me. He's fantastic. He's been absolutely fantastic. And I was told that he might not stay to Arsenal, which I think might be a mistake.
Oh, thank you very much for that, Frank. More from Frank and Nader on Extra Time. Be sure to stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, of course, a big weekend at the bottom of the table. Norwich in big trouble. Watford as well. For Burnley, 1 point off Everton. Everton in action against Spurs on Monday. A big match for them just to try and get a little bit of distance between themselves and the drop zone.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Play of action on Sunday in La Liga. We saw Barcelona come from behind to beat Elche by 2-1. They're third in the table. Meanwhile, Atleti with a big win away against Real Betis, defeating Pellegrini's side by 3-1, meaning they move up to fourth in the table, 2 points clear of Betis. For more on this, let's welcome in Luis Garcia, shall we? Luis, in the end, Atleti getting it done. And as we heard the boys on the commentary, that's 3 wins in a row now.
Yes, of course. Good confidence for Atletico Madrid. Looking forward for the end of this season. Of course, getting into the top four is a must for this club from the beginning of the competition. And I think it was a good second half. The team looked organized, even though they conceded a few more chances. But at the end, with the quality and talent they got up front, players like Griezmann, Carrasco, Llorente, João Félix, they got so much space up front, so it was not enough for Real Betis to hold them. When they start bringing and committing players forward, they left spaces at the back, and the talent of these players ended the game in scoring the second one and at the end the last one that we've seen. The idea and the concern is, why not this Atletico in Madrid is playing a little bit higher on the pitch? We mentioned it just in the pre-show. What could these players do if they are closer, 40, 30 yards closer to the other goal? I think if they can manage to do that, this Atletico in Madrid could be challenging for the title. But I think it's going to be a little bit too late.
They never really had complete control of this game. It was a bit crazy, a bit bonkers, obviously. Chances at both ends. Does that matter if you just get the win, get it done?
You watched Atleti this season?
Yeah, that's true.
Never had complete control of any game, no matter who they've been playing. Look, 3 wins in a row, the way their form has been. You know, João Félix scoring goals.
Yep.
Much better counter-attacking in the second half. Much better care of the football. Better final pass. Obviously, getting Griezmann in some game time is a big bonus because he's a quality player. Think about the chance that they had in the first half with Carrasco as well. So, yeah, it's looking much better for them. But yeah, you know, I just feel with this Atleti side that at any time they could implode.
Yeah.
But for the last three games, they've got the job done. And, of course, they've got a big game against Man United in the Champions League as well.
Yeah.
So lots to play for, even though by their standards and squad, it's been a bit of a disappointing season.
We've been asking for more, haven't we, from João Félix? Are we starting to see it a little bit, Luis?
Yeah, I think so. I think today he's been a key player. He's been involved in most of the plays at front, assisting the players, working even when they have to go on the press. And of course, near the post, where I think he's a killer. He knows how to move. That step back to don't get involved, to get away from the defender, is just fantastic. Finishing the play as well. But I think the most important is like that he continues receiving minutes. He continues playing week in and week out. That's the way that we are going to see the best of João Félix. You can see here once again, running to the space, waiting to don't get enough sight for the pass from Llorente. I think he's been, for me, the man of the match of the game. Fantastic to see him for many minutes on the field. And hopefully we can see him more often, because definitely he's one of such a talent and we want to see these kind of players every single week.
So Real Betis unable to end what was a huge week for them on a high, losing by 3-1. But of course, they have the solace of qualifying for the Copa del Rey final this week in the most dramatic of circumstances. It was for Valencia as well. What a match that should be, live here on ESPN Plus on April the 23rd. Meanwhile, Barcelona in action against Elche. Barca dominated much of the first half. However, they would go in 1-0 down at the break. Fidel with a goal to make it 1-0.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a mistake from Pedri. He's anticipating a challenge there. So he's going to try and win that second ball. Unfortunately, it goes the wrong side of Dani Alves, and it was a brilliant finish.
Ferran Torres would come on as a second-half substitute and would get the equalise here. Opportunistic?
It is opportunistic, because I think that was a strike at goal and not a pass. But nevertheless, he's in the right area just to finish it off. Just here, don't think he's tried to pass there at all, but it lands at the feet of Ferran Torres and he adjusts well.
1-1 as we take it into the 81st minute. Memphis Depay coming off the bench and winning a penalty here that wasn't initially given. However, VAR would send the referee over to the monitor. He would see the elbow and he would say, spot kick.
Who was the referee? It was Gerard Piqué, the referee. He certainly was making... Yeah, I don't think there's a doubt about this. It's an unfortunate incident, but once it popped up and come off the arm and then...
What about that? Yeah, that's silly.
It's just... Right, it could easily go wrong, that.
Oh, come on, Mr. Negative.
No, I'm just saying, when you go so far for that corner, it's close to being dangerous.
Now, this upset the Elche fans, the players and the bench as well. They felt Jordi Alba handled the ball.
Yeah, turns his back on it and it hits the arm. That's the problem when you do that. But, you know, what have I said on this show many times? It's Elche, it's a smaller side.
The complaints would continue at the full-time whistle, but of course would fall on deaf ears as Barcelona take all 3 points to beat Elche as they continue this good run in all competitions. So welcome, Gab Marcotti is with us, who is watching that game for us as well. Gab, overall, despite the controversy, Barca deserved this.
No question about it, Dan. They deserved it. They had chances in the first half. Personally, I would have had no problem if that penalty hadn't been given, although then we wouldn't have seen Memphis Depay's incredible finish and Craig Burley reminding us of the risks involved when you get penalties like that. Joking aside, it shows, I think, also the belief that Xavi's given this team, because, you know, we've seen this before under Koeman. You know, Barcelona maybe create chances, things don't go their way, it's 1-1, things kind of slow down. But no, he chucks on Ferran Torres. All of a sudden, they're more incisive. Busquets, I thought, had a huge game in the middle of the park, and they believe until the end, and they're justly rewarded.
And it's that depth in squad, Luis, that they can rely on a little bit more, obviously, after those January transfer signings, that you can bring on the likes of Ferran Torres to make a difference, as opposed to before Christmas, you had Xavi looking at his bench and bringing off youngsters for their debuts.
Yes, of course. We have to say also that after that crisis, you can say that a lot of positive things have happened, because Nico, Gavi, there have been players who have been involved more because of that lack of depth in the squad. But definitely arriving Adama, Aubameyang, Ferran Torres, give a lot of strength to this squad, because now you can have a look. Today, Gavi was in their left side, and suddenly you change him and you change for Ferran Torres, and Adamas comes out in the second half, plus Memphis Depay. So at the end, there is a lot of quality and talent that you are waiting on the bench to come into the game, and definitely something that for the Barcelona's manager Xavi is something to very positive. And well, you can see it on the result from the past 11 games, I think it is.
We heard Alche. Oh, sorry, you're going to say something?
It's all about options. But trust me. I don't know if Lewis took penalties. I certainly did take penalties. If you hit the ball with Lewis that far in the corner, you have not tried that, have you?
No, I haven't tried. I used to take penalties also, but when I took them, I have always one side. I went for it, but I try never to put it that high.
No.
Never at all, because you try to point that way, it can go away. And today, I've seen Memphis taking another one very similar. But today it was dangerous because a little bit wider and he's flying away.
Anybody that says they try to put it that far in the corner is telling you a lie.
Really?
Oh, 100%.
He was just very confident.
I'll tell you what. No. he's trying to hit it hard and high, but not that close to the to the stanchion. Trust me, it looks great. I think the other thing was from Barcelona. Yeah, he didn't score. He should have scored Frankie de Jong. But he just seems to be getting more like his old self in terms of...
He's getting in good positions, isn't he?
Getting in better positions. Finishing wasn't great today, but he's getting in there, making those runs from the middle of the park. Yeah, I mean, it's the little flick it comes out from the arm here. I think it's instinct. I don't think it's intentional. But, listen, I think the referee's always going to give it. And are we going to see this penalty once more? Is that what this is? He's not trying this,
go.
Trust me.
There you go.
Trust me. He's not trying to get it that far in the corner. But anyway, it's brilliant. But I bet he wouldn't do that in a World Cup final if it was a shootout.
Look at that.
Yes.
Gab, where did you stand on the penalty appeals that Elche felt that the referee at least should have gone and looked at the monitor for handball against Jordi Alba?
Look, I think there's a big level of discretion and interpretation, despite what people say, oh, it's the sleeve, it's this, it's that. I always feel better when you have the referee making the call, because for me, it was not a penalty. It's not just the fact that, you know, he turns his back, that's less relevant. It's where his arm is. His arm, while it is kind of extended a little bit, it is relatively close to his body. So, I think... I'd be more comfortable if the referee took a look. They didn't see an issue with it. But again, on the flow of the game, I mean, I think Barcelona deserved to win this two or three times over, no question about it.
Yeah, they've got a nice flow, nice bit of momentum going. Luis, it's interesting what just a couple of months ago we were questioning whether or not they could finish in the top four. Now they could maybe even catch Sevilla.
Yeah, definitely. For me, I think the idea from the very beginning was trying the top four since Xavi arrived. But now the team looks so strong, so solid. It should, at a point during the games, look vulnerable at the back. That's something that Xavi, I'm sure, that is trying to work out with Piqué, with Araujo. They are becoming more and more the couple to keep forward, like the strength one or the strongest one. So at the end, it's about can they manage to continue being like this, to having all the players involved, to having all the players with that confidence, and of course, to continue scoring the chances that they are creating. Because definitely today, we saw Barcelona scoring two goals, but they could have been three or four more, because we've seen De Jong having two very clear chances, Ferran Torres another two or three clear chances, Adama exactly the same. So at the end, they need to capitalize those, because if not at the end, you can draw points, drawing games, and this Barcelona cannot allow that. So they need to continue the same way. So yeah, I think they could even arrive to chase Sevilla in the last three, four games at the end of the season.
Luis Garcia, as always, thank you very much for your time. Just a reminder, La Liga action continues tomorrow. Athletic Club taking on struggling Levante. That game live here on Plus at 3 p.m. Eastern. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast.
Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
No doubt where the big game was in Italy on Sunday, Napoli taking on AC Milan. Olivier Giroud proving to be the difference between the two sides. His goal 4 minutes into the second half would give them a massive 3 points to very much reignite their title hopes. 2 points clear then of Inter in second, Napoli down in third. Gab Marcotti with us. Gab, what a win for Milan.
Tremendous win coming at the end. They certainly stepped it up in the second half. First half, both teams went at it. Both teams play with a lot of energy. We didn't really have too much in the way of chances other than perhaps a couple penalty shouts. Victor Osimhen, very difficult to contain. But then in the second half, Giroud, right man in the right place at the right time, seizing upon Davide Calabria's errant shot and just steering it into the Napoli goal. And then Milan from there didn't make the mistake of sitting back. They continued to press and saw out the win. So it's a huge 3 points for Stefano Pioli, as you said. It's a bit harsh on Napoli. I don't know. They had their opportunities as well earlier. But I think on the balance of play, what we saw in the second half, Milan deserving the 3 points.
I saw you tweet, Gab, released the Zlatan, and they didn't need him in the end.
Well, I tweeted it as he was coming on in the 89th minute because I think it has a certain symbolic significance as well. Obviously, you know, he's obviously older now. His contract is up. They're talking about, if he extends, he's going to take a massive pay cut. It's going to be all bonuses. And he himself has come out in his book. He's talked about how, you know, he knows his role. He puts a team first. And I guarantee you, he was coming on for defensive headers and to hold the ball and to get kick. He wasn't coming on to be Zlatan. He was coming on to be sort of, you know, humble, a big man, a striker with a hard hat on. And that's his role in this Milan team. And he's loving it. And by the way, Dan, he did say he's not going to retire until Milan wins something. So, you know, why, if he is thinking of heading off in the sunset, well, why not win it this year?
So then, Gab, which team are you putting the Marcotti millions on?
This is really, really problematic. I think Inter's game in hand does matter. They got a big win over Salernitana. Of course, it's only Salernitana. This was back on Friday night. But Lautaro scoring again. He had a hat trick. I think that could potentially be a game changer. As of right now, I am leaning very, very slightly towards Inter, but especially if they get knocked out of the Champions League by Liverpool, which obviously they lost 2-0 at home, so it's looking that way. But honestly, Dan, there have been so many twists and turns in this Serie A race. I don't put anything beyond them. And Inter, of course, mind you, they still have to play Juventus. 14 games unbeaten now. They won again today against Spezia. That's another big one that they have to navigate around.
Great stuff, Gab, as always. For more from Gab, check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, which drops on Monday. As always, a bumper edition. Horrific scenes last night in Saturday's Liga MX match between Querétaro and Atlas, which was suspended following scenes of violence in the stands that spilled onto the pitch. Now, Liga MX say that 24 people injured, 9 were taken to the hospital, 2 of whom in a serious condition. All Liga MX matches were suspended this weekend. And for more, let's welcome in, shall we, Cristina Alexander from ESPN Deportes. Cristina, you've been following the league for a very long time, a very dark night indeed for Liga MX. What's the latest?
Dan, thanks for having me on ESPN FC. You said a very dark time, probably the darkest in Mexican soccer history, to be completely honest. That was one of the most recurrent statements that I saw, and the reaction, obviously, on social media. The latest is Mikel Arriola has officially announced the president of the Liga MX that with the ultras, the visiting ultras, or the animation groups, as he kept calling them in this press conference, won't be able to have access to visiting stadiums. That is probably what a lot of fans were waiting for, but also they were waiting for local ultras to be banned, just ultra groups to be banned in general in Mexico. That is what a lot of fans, a lot of families that are definitely affected by these kind of things, that is what the images that we saw last night. Another thing, Dan, when we talk about Querétaro Stadium with La Corregidora, everything that happened last night, he said that indefinitely and until further notice, there will be absolutely no soccer activity in that vicinity. And this isn't the first time, unfortunately, that this has happened, and in La Liga MX in general, and also with Querétaro Dim.
Chris, I was watching these images last night, and some of them you just couldn't watch. They were so disturbing, the fans so angry and almost feral. You look at it and you just kind of think, well, how could this have happened? Where were the police?
That's a great question, Dan, and that was definitely one of the questions that they asked Gabriel Suarez, the president of Querétaro's football club. What actually happened? Why did this get so out of control? And what he said is that in total, between private security, state security, and also local authority, that there were 600 total security guards. The problem was with the logistics. The problem was that the plan wasn't executed. But as you can imagine, Dan, you already talked about these statistics with so many people that were injured. A lot of speculation as to how badly they were injured as well is, why is this the reason that the plan wasn't executed properly? Because you saw and you see in the images that I totally agree with you are very, very difficult to watch because it was just chaos and madness. And it looked like there was absolutely no control and that there was no difference if there were security elements, 600 confirmed by Gabriel Suarez, or zero security guards.
Is there a history of big rivalry between these teams?
Yeah, so the way that it works actually in Mexico, Dan, when we talk about these kind of big rivalries, Querétaro against Atlas, Querétaro against San Luis, or if we talk about the clásicos with the Clásico Nacional with América Chivas, the security team has a way of kind of rating it from low risk to high risk. It's either A, AA, or AAA. So AAA being the most serious case, which they had that for last night. So it's also a bit confusing as to why there was a lack of reaction with the history and the fact that they put that AAA stamped on this kind of game. So it's definitely frustrating and it's upsetting and it's sad that we see this news travel internationally. Of course, the Mexican League wants to be recognized on a global stage. This isn't the way to do it. And if you're going to label it as a high-risk match, you have to do better. So, yeah, there is definitely history with the Querétaro fans. Like I mentioned, I was present in that game a few years ago with the San Luis match that also went out of control. That was at a different stadium. But we have seen this with Atlas fans as well. So it's something that they have to do case by case, but it's time, Dan, for Mikel Arriola to put his foot down and to really take advantage of this terrible tragedy, this terrible situation, to really just set a precedent and find a way to finally not have to talk about this anymore.
Chris, we know in 4 years' time, some of the World Cup matches will be held in Mexico. Does this have any material effect on that?
That's been one of the greatest questions, and a lot of people are actually talking about that on different platforms of social media, Dan, because the argument was Mexico needs to get more of the important games. Let's talk about a quarterfinal, a semifinal. You know, historically, what the World Cup has meant to Mexico and some of the most famous games. We're talking about Pelé. We're talking about Maradona in the Estadio Azteca. So now the fact that it's being questioned, because we did see official statements from CONCACAF, from FIFA, just kind of lamenting what happened and really saddened about this situation, and that hopefully local authorities take the proper precautions. But the reality of the situation, Dan, is that money talks. So that's something that, of course, FIFA and CONCACAF have in mind. We know that Mexico has kind of also been under pressure to eradicate what this homophobic chant has kind of been going on in the last few years. So there's a lot of pressure for the Mexican Federation to really try to clean up the image. I don't know how they can come back from that. I don't want to say that this is going to eliminate any possibility for Mexico participating in that 2026 World Cup, but it's something to consider. And I think it's going to affect fans visiting Mexico, because a lot of people see and assume things about Mexico because of what they see on TV, because of what they see, you know, in different series and the reputation. So this is not going to help, at least with revenue, with visiting fans, or even the image with FIFA and CONCACAF.
Christian Alexander from ESPN Deportes, thank you very much for your time. For a lot more on this story as it develops, go over to ESPN FC. That is it. That brings us to the end of today's show. Be sure to stay tuned, though. I think it's Frank and Nadim who are back. Craig as well will be here as well to answer your questions for extra time. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for your tweets.
I switched on earlier this morning.
Did you? What are you doing with your hands? What are you doing with
your hands? What do you want me to do? Sit on them. Now, this morning, just before the just at halftime of the Barcelona game, long day for you, son.
Yeah.
I would have come in and helped you.
Yeah, I know.
I wasn't asked.
Busy. Yeah, it's because they know what the response would be.
Yeah, the table was tidy.
Right.
Just you. Looked a bit lonely.
Yeah.
I must admit, you did look a bit lonely. No friends.
That's okay. A bit of peace. I didn't mind.
Look at you now.
Well, I've been busy. Right. It's all my notes, isn't it, for the show today? There's a lot going on.
Why don't right? Simplify it. Get yourself a little, some sort of laptop electronic device, make yourself look a bit more articulate than you are.
I'm not very good.
Just spill it down.
No, I'm not as, Kay has her iPad here, doesn't she, and things like that, and Seb's got every...
Yeah, but she's not, there's nothing to do with notes.
Nadim is here, as is Frank. Nadim, I saw you telling everybody on whatever day it was that you didn't think you'd like me at first because I stared at the camera doing an interview with you. Where else am I supposed to be looking?
No, it's the way that you stared, because you did exactly the same thing when you were speaking with Christina.
Yeah.
Like, you were asking her a question, and it was like...
I don't think that was my technique.
I never thought... It wasn't far off, so I really didn't understand what was going on, but now I get it, so fair enough.
He does that, Nathan, when he has no idea what he's talking about, which is generally about 99.9.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's very true.
It's the bluffer's look, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've been doing bluffing for a long time.
Bluffer's look.
Okay, does Nathan still appreciate these City wins over United like he once did? It's almost like a top side being a mid-table side these days.
100% yes. Yes. Because I remember the 90s, I remember the early 2000s, and it wasn't fun. So in these type of occasions, the win's one thing, but the nature of the win's another, because for as good as City are, at the moment the conversation is how bad United are and how they need to essentially just start afresh. And that is not something that I've heard leveled at Manchester United during my my younger years. So I very much appreciate it. And today was a fantastic day in the city for me.
What's your course of action when it comes to mocking your Manchester United friends, Nathan? What sort of path do you take?
I tend to just message them and say, how are you feeling? And what do you think? And then just pretend to be that sort of caring friend, yeah, I think that grievance is right. No, you guys will be back soon.
Yeah.
You'll be back soon, yeah. I've done all that, yeah.
Yeah, false hope. That's what you give them.
Did you see Bruno Fernandes?
Mm-hmm, that's right.
Just before the second half.
No, what
was it? Chummy chat with Kevin De Bruyne.
Really?
Yeah, on the halfway line.
What were they chatting about?
I don't know, look very chummy, very laughing. Oh, yeah. I just don't get that, to be honest.
Right.
I mean, I acknowledge when you know people on the field that are either friends or ex-colleagues or team, whatever. But that just, I don't, looked a bit chummy to me.
Right.
I didn't like it.
No,
leave that for after. It was kind of laughing and joking sort of stuff. And I'm like, it's a game on here, lads. City are winning.
Focus.
Leave that to after.
After today's game against City, do you think Rangnick has any chance of becoming United's coach next season, Craig?
No. But I don't know.
Who's it going to be? Who's going to be the new guy? Everyone's saying Pochettino, but...
I don't know if I'd touch it if I was him. I mean, they've got such a big gap to City and Liverpool now.
Yeah, and you're not even going to be in the Champions League next season.
Unlikely at the moment. Possibly, but unlikely. There's a lot of problems there. He's not playing well. He's not playing well. He doesn't like me. Don't like him. Don't like the colour of his car. Training's garbage.
He should be captain.
He shouldn't be captain. I should be playing. What are you signing him for? I mean, yeah. Holy smokes, it's a mess.
Yeah.
It's an expensive mess.
Yeah, and PSG obviously is traditionally the most expensive mess, Frank. But really, do you want to leave PSG to go to Manchester United if you're Pochettino at the moment?
I wouldn't, because at least with Paris Saint-Germain, you have some results, you know? You can't hold the dressing room. Of course, it's a mess. You don't know what to do with the players because they do whatever they want. But at least you have, some results where I think you have to break everything and rebuild everything. You know, I was told that Manchester United, since Sir Alex Ferguson left, spent 1.5 billion, I guess it's euros or pounds, for that result. Where City spend less and other teams spend less as well. For that result, if I'm the coach of it, I don't know what to say when I come over. What do I do? I say to half of the squad to get out. But can I do that? I'm not sure. And rebuild everything? Can I? I'm not sure as well. So I think some coaches will wonder.
Think back to a few years ago when we were in, where were we, LA. What a trip that was. Stuck with you for 4 days.
It was lovely, we had a nice time. Yeah, but Venice Beach, hand in hand.
I think we're overworked. Do you remember when Mourinho, it was the ICC, wasn't it?
Yep.
And I don't think it might have been that trip. And I know there was other issues. And I know Mourinho, particularly in his latter years, has been far from perfect. But he could smell... Do you remember his demeanour?
Yeah, he'd had enough.
He'd had enough about that summer he wanted to go a certain direction with transfers, and he knew he was fighting against it, and he knew the direction it was going. Yeah, there's people out there who can't see a bigger picture who say, well, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer took him to second. Well, Mourinho did, but Ole took him to second. But yeah, and I was saying all along, Ole took him to second in a year where Liverpool could hardly field a team with the injuries, where Chelsea sacked a manager and were playing catch-up, so everybody else regressed apart from Manchester City.
Yep.
And that allowed United to get over the line and finish second, but it did not paper over the cracks. But Mourinho saw this coming. When would that be now? 5 years ago, whatever it was, give or take. And it's just sort of rotted on from there and into the position it's in now. So, I don't know if I'd want to touch that job. I mean, there'll be people out there that will take it.
Yeah, of course.
But who? That remains to be seen.
Of course, we'll discuss this, I'm sure, more throughout the week. Meanwhile, it's a good question. If you had a choice between Kevin De Bruyne and Salah, knowing how their future would turn out, who would you keep and who would you sell during their Chelsea days, Frank?
Oh.
Mmm.
Wow. That's a tough one. My God. Every time I think about a name, I think that it will be useful. And I would say I will keep De Bruyne because he works in the middle of the park and he can create stuff and good chances for the others, instead of Salah being more finisher.
Yes, but hasn't Chelsea been missing a finisher all these years? Isn't that exactly what they need?
That's true, but De Bruyne can do both, you know? And today he proved that, you know? With an assist to Mahrez on the corner kick and two goals. So I will go, choosing between my mother and my father, I will go for De Bruyne.
Nadim?
I think for Chelsea and the issues that we perceive them to have had over the last few years, I think I would go for Salah. But I can't doubt Kevin De Bruyne's impact because he's tremendous. But it seems like Chelsea have been begging for them to have a 20, 30 goal a season striker for a little while now. So maybe that would have been the difference. So if he would have had Salah and he was doing just that, I guess that'd be the better value option for them.
Yeah, Frank.
They've got a 20, 30 goal striker.
He said that he's right, you know, whatever. everybody can have an opinion. You know, talk me up a little bit, Dan Thomas. Talk me up, please.
Frank,
right? You're the king of talking yourself up. You need no help.
They've got a 20-30 goal strike.
Well, yes, but
he just can't score.
He's not producing at the moment. Who would you do in that?
It's scary to think that Chelsea let those goals. Ironically, Mourinho, I believe.
Yeah.
It is scary to think.
I think we're flying at the time, weren't they, I suppose?
No, and those guys were a little bit younger then and less experienced, so, you know, hindsight. I just like De Bruyne. I like both, but I like De Bruyne.
Right.
I just like De Bruyne.
But Salah will get you goals.
Yeah.
You see, Dan? Dan, you see?
Well, because Burley said it definitely doesn't mean it's right.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Marouane Fellaini.
Okay. Right. Naden, out of these three, who would be the manager, who would be the assistant, and who would you get rid of? Alex Ferguson, Arsene Wenger, and Jose Mourinho.
Wow.
Ooh. I think you go Sir Alex, then you go Wenger, then you go Mourinho.
Wow.
I think that's probably... Well, obviously somebody has to go, so it's, you know, you're going to rile people however you see it. But like, as far as the Premier League goes, Sir Alex is an iconic, then yeah. So was Arsene Wenger, because he sort of brought in a new approach at a certain time. And Mourinho's obviously very good and he's a serial winner and all that stuff. But I think the legacy of the first two is just a bit greater, I think, than Mourinho. But there's no harm in saying that, is there?
Now, Mourinho won Champions League, obviously, which Wenger never did, Nathan.
Yeah, but I'm just talking about domestic, you know, let's not make it too technical, you know, don't drag me into any issues here, please. I'm just trying to enjoy my day.
Yeah.
And now you're trying to get me cancelled on the internet, so please let me relax.
Frank's pointing, here he goes.
Nathan, if you're talking about domestic, don't forget that Arsene Wenger didn't lose one game during the whole season, which never happened under Sir Alex Ferguson from Manchester United.
So you're going to have
now, would you change your mind? Yeah, I would have Wenger because he's French and he's perfect, therefore perfect guy. Because of the invincible
Frank.
No, because when you arrive, people say, Arsene who? Arsene who? Okay. I will put Arsene, then Sir Alex Ferguson, and then Mr. Jose Mourinho.
Frank's clearly wrong again.
What's that?
You've got to have Sir Alex Ferguson first.
I'm having Sir Alex.
Out of those three?
And then because I'm looking at the dynamic, so I'm
going... No, he's Scottish, he's white.
I'm going with...
yeah, Greg's very loyal.
And then I've got David Moyes. Very good manager, yeah. I have to say, very good manager. And then I'm having Alec McLeish.
Yep.
Any other Scots? Not many Scots. There's a lot of Scots managing in England. Yep. Not so many now, it's gone away. I would go...
Who's the guy from Coventry?
Gordon Strachan.
Gordon Strachan.
Yes! Yeah, you have to put Gordon Strachan as well.
There we go.
Graham Souness.
Right. Stevie Nicol. Who would you have, Wenger or Mourinho?
Stevie Nicol. Yes. The list goes on. His big packet of chips. can he not eat a small pack?
No, he always goes party bag. It's like a party for one when Stevie gets a packet of chips.
He puts it over his head. Just opens it, he puts it over his head. Whatever ends up in his mouth, that's it.
I know. What's the bag?
I would go Ferguson, Wenger, Mourinho. Just because... Wenger's style of football and the way that he transformed Arsenal from a bunch of drunks basically to an unbelievable.
Look at what Mourinho did at Porto and then at Chelsea.
Yeah, Porto was the. I was in Seville when they beat Celtic.
That's irrelevant.
A lot about
why does that matter?
Just giving you some.
Why is that relevant?
And then next year he wins the Champions League and then he does it, but I'm still going Wenger.
Right.
Just because you're annoyed by it.
Frank, PSG.
I told you I was at City when Aguero scored that goal.
You did mention it, yes. So was Nathan.
Yeah, I know. Oh, I think I was probably blaming Nathan.
Probably.
She was lying on the floor.
Forget Joey Barton. It was all about Nathan.
Joey Barton lost. I remember Hitchie, my mate, dragging Joey Barton off, helping to drag him off. They'd all lost it at that point.
Right.
Sparky Hughes must have just been thinking, what the hell? We're getting relegated.
And then they didn't. Everyone's happy.
And everybody's happy all round.
Well, apart from Joey Barton.
I was not happy. There was too many people there. I never got a quick getaway.
Frank.
Always look a quick getaway.
PSG has rumours of cliques in the dressing room, depending on the player's region of origin. Chelsea being an international club as well. When you were there, did you experience the same thing?
No, I didn't, because I think Dennis White made really clear the first second we came into the dressing room that everybody had to speak English, everybody has to follow the rules, and it couldn't be different. Right. I think that's the main concern. I read something about a fan saying, I can't understand that, for example, Di Maria, who I think has been to the club for more than 5 years, only speaking Spanish in front of the television, but I guess also in the dressing room. I think it's unbearable for me. You come to a club, you change the country from where you arrived, you have to adapt. It's like when you come to a country as a normal citizen, you have to adapt to the rules of the, and the law of the country you're living in. And that's the same for a club. You have to adapt, and there were some rules. We have to try to understand the Scottish speaking, Craig Burley, for example, but also the Cockney, Dennis Wise. And this is what we had to learn to from them and to accept that.
See, I had to learn the new language problem. When I went to Chelsea.
What was that?
English.
How long was it when Frank joined you wish that he hadn't learned English?
I felt it immediately.
About 6.5 minutes. The only people the players didn't like at the club were the French players.
Right.
And there was only one. There was no clicks. It was a very cosmopolitan side in there. Even right. Before Frank came.
Yep.
We had. I'm thinking about the back four at one point was Dimitri, the Russian in goal.
And was there any other clicks?
No. Erland was okay. Norwegian.
I don't really. Wikipedia.
Scottish
squad in 96 Chelsea.
By the way, Jack, do you remember Jakob Kjellberg, Danish centre half, who had to retire at 25 with injury, is one of the biggest TV hosts for all the game shows in Denmark now. So
there you go.
As a host, he's made a real career for himself. And you're stuck here.
Beautiful, listening to you blabber on about old Chelsea days.
So then we had another Scottishman up front.
Craig, you know why he's so successful? Because he respects the pundits.
Right,
yeah. And like somebody that we all know. That's what he is.
He doesn't stare at the camera.
Nadim, what was it like? True. What was it like at City when they bring in all these foreign players with regards to those cliques?
Overall, it was fine, because I think the way that they recruit now is like they sort of figure out people not just on the field but off the field as well, and they give them English lessons as soon as they come so that you can integrate into the side. But at its worst, there would be little fractions. This is the French-speaking group, this is the Spanish-speaking group, and worst of all, like if things aren't going well, they always seem to just sort of hang around together. And it's a very weird feeling to be playing in England and not having a clue what people are saying about the situation that your team's involved in. So I think the whole thing about trying to encourage people to speak English is huge, because then it feels like everybody's in it together, as opposed to when things go wrong. You know, everybody having a different load, like a load of opinions, but then not even being able to share them as well.
Final question. Any memories of getting a thrashing in a derby? Anything spring to mind?
Didn't get thrashed by Rangers.
Nathan?
Oh, yes, do I. Can't let it go. It was when I was at Sunderland, 2010. We were doing really well in the league, and then it's like, right, we're going to go and play at St James's Park. You could tell it was a big game. Everyone knew when that fixture was. As soon as you arrived, you sort of gathered the history behind it and all that. We're getting the bus over to Newcastle. It's like a 30-minute journey. There's like police helicopters, like the bikes, everything. Get to the stadium, 1,000 fans outside, spitting at the bus, throwing stuff at us and all this. And I'm like taking in like, this is funny, you know, it's still going to be a good game when we win. And we lost 5-1. Ooh. And that's probably as low as I felt, I think, on a football field, based on the sort of scenario and situation that it was in my entire career. That was so bad, and it's still spoken about to this day. And I'm very much reminded by it by every Newcastle fan that I see.
How many of the goals were your fault?
Let me think. Probably one or two.
Yeah, three or four, I read. When I read the report, it was three or four.
There was one. No, there was one. There was one, and yeah, I'm still not over it. So thank you very much for your service, Dan. Thank you for helping me out.
That's all right. Frank, have you got a thrashing in a derby?
Yeah, it's funny that when you are football players, we try to be very serious, you know, and try to you know, put us, you know, to the best. And as soon as we give up the career, the thing is to kill ourselves, you know, to make sure we're like normal people and we are, in fact, not a very, absolutely no very good players. Well, yes, the Derby Classico, no, it wasn't a Derby, it was a Classico Marseille, in Marseille against Paris Saint-Germain, where I tried to change, put the ball far away right side, and I completely missed, and I gave the ball to the feet of Ronaldinho, who went to score on his own, and it was a second goal, therefore we killed the game. I was very happy with that. And people are still talking about it.
Wow.
And I send them my regards.
Oh, that's nice. Like your back pass to David Beckham, Craig.
Yeah. Well, so I always say, it was a springboard for that man's career.
He should get royalties.
I should be still getting royalties.
Okay, I think that's enough of everything now. Thank you very much, everyone.
Rude.
We'll be back tomorrow for more Everton.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.